Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, our herd hierarchy, and it is crazy. It is the craziest herd hierarchy we've ever had. I strongly believe it. There'll be teams left out you won't believe, but these are the 10 best teams, in my opinion. In 1 hour from now, Joy Taylor is joining me as we get ready. Boy, next week is Christmas Eve on Monday, and Christmas. Last night, the Saints, it was a remarkably fascinating game for the lack of offense. I thought it was fascinating, but it was not very artistic.
It's very bizarre.
It was rough. It was rough around the edges. And I want to start with this. I'm into winning. And I've never been into a lot of the awards and stuff. But I like winning. Cam Newton doesn't win enough. He's never had back-to-back winning seasons, and he's not going to have one now. That's virtually impossible when you have his talent. Think about this. He's on a 6-game losing streak. The Raiders, the dysfunctional Raiders, haven't lost 6 straight games this year. The Buffalo Bills, rebuilding their entire offense with a rookie quarterback, haven't lost 6 straight games. The perpetually dysfunctional Tampa Bay Buccaneers haven't lost 6 straight games. Cam Newton's on a 6-game losing streak. In his career, Russell Wilson's longest losing streak is 2. Andrew Luck, bad coaches, bad GMs, bad O-lines, longest losing streak is 4. Big Ben, 4. Aaron Rodgers once lost 5, but that was his first year as a starter. Tom Brady's had a losing streak of 4. Even Andy Dalton and Kirk Cousins drive me nuts. They've never lost more than 4 straight. Well, he's hurt. Oh, Cam's always a victim. Oh, he's hurt. By the way, same head coach for years, continuity. He's had 8 offensive Pro Bowlers the last 7 years. McCaffrey will be 9. The defense has been in the top 10 5 of the last 7 years. He's on a 6-game losing streak. And by the way, they face Atlanta at home on a short week, and at New Orleans, it may become an 8-game losing streak. Cam Newton doesn't win enough. But you know what? It doesn't matter because Carolina is absolutely trapped. Carolina's become the Oklahoma City Thunder of the NFL. They have an iconic superstar in a small market who's hard to coach, doesn't play well with others. He's completely flawed, but he's got that one MVP year and one trip to the Super Bowl / finals, and they're trapped. And they're keeping him forever. Until the arm falls off. Carolina and Oklahoma City, small markets have never had the courage to move off the iconic flawed superstar. Local fans would freak out in Oklahoma City. They would completely freak out. Privately, Oklahoma City will tell you they trust Paul George more late in games right now than they do Russell Westbrook. And they know Russell's hard to coach. And they know his style of basketball, which is he can't shoot, so he has to relentlessly, athletically drive to the basket, meaning more injuries, is not good long term. They had the best of him so far. He's eroding quickly. And privately, Oklahoma City knows it, but publicly, they'll put their arms around him because the fans would freak out. They've already lost Durant and James Harden. And similarly, privately, I know because I have it sourced for years. Carolina, Cam Newton drives Carolina people nuts. But they're not going to say that publicly because it's a small market and he's an icon. And just like Paul George is more trustable now late than Westbrook, Christian McCaffrey's the guy that threw a touchdown pass last night. He's more trustable now late than Cam Newton. But they're trapped. I mean, if you look at Westbrook and you look at the 6 or 7 things that have happened to Westbrook, he can't shoot. That's undeniable. He's not a great shooter. He's a great scorer. He's aging, increasingly hurt, very expensive, tough to coach, and relies too much just on sheer athletic ability. That's Cam. In a precision analytics league, he's not really an accurate thrower. He's aging, increasingly hurt, very expensive, tough to coach, and relies too much on just sheer athletic ability. He's never gotten down the precision thing. And privately, both organizations know They're probably not a Super Bowl, probably not an NBA championship. Hard to play with. But they're trapped. They're trapped. I mean, last night was interesting because Carolina got the ball with a minute 44 left. And I'm watching with my wife. And she says, oh, this reminds me of Brady and Ben the other day. I said, no, it doesn't. Carolina has no shot to score. This is not against that Saints defense. You're not going to do it. And they got one first down. And this is the reality of it. This happens all the time in sports, and we never talk about this stuff, is that certain markets restrict you. And you get to one of these Buffaloes and Carolina and Green Bay and Oklahoma City, and you get one of these Favre and Cam and Westbrooks, you are trapped. You are trapped. You cannot get rid of him. And that Russell Westbrook's going to be a Hall of Famer. I'd pay money to watch Russell Westbrook. I think he's fantastic. But now he's past his prime. Now he's expensive, hurt, tough to play with, hard to coach. And Paul George, I trust more down the stretch. And Cam Newton now is hurt more, expensive more, had more than enough support. Well, he's hurt. You notice when you rely on athletic ability, when you rely throwing the ball more on, you know, mechanically arm than legs, yes, it's hard for that shoulder injury to heal. Nothing against Cam, but this throw in the fourth quarter was indicative of his night on the final drive. Here it is.
63 seconds remaining. Here's some pressure now on Newton. Von Bell comes in. And that was an awkward throw that was driven low and incomplete.
Well, it's the thing about Cam Newton that puzzles a lot of people. He's an upper body thrower. He doesn't really step with his lower body and generate power. And when you're an upper body thrower like Cam Newton is, you're going to lead to a lot of inaccurate passes. Watch him get all his torque from his upper body. That leads to a lot of inaccurate passes, even though the ball got tipped from Cam Newton there.
By the way, you criticize Westbrook, OKC fans go nuts. You can criticize Durant. I can criticize LeBron. My Twitter doesn't explode. I can criticize Brady. I can criticize Rodgers. I can criticize. You criticize Cam, people go nuts. OKC and Carolina, they're trapped. Westbrook and Cam are going to be there until the arms fall off.
What did I tell you about getting in those mentions, Colin? I tried to tell you.
So let me shift to this. I'm not into awards. I'm not. But this year, NFL MVP has me intrigued. They do not give out the Oscars in Hollywood in January, February, March, April. Let me say it again. They don't give them out in the summer. They wait until the big movies come out in November, December. Then they wait for the big movies to come out in Hollywood. Then they give you the Oscars. They don't do it in, you know, April, May, June. Nobody's talking about that. College football always wants to hand out the Heisman by week 6. They're talking about it in like October. I want to see Alabama play Georgia, Alabama play Auburn, Alabama in the SEC championship. Can we wait for the big games? In Hollywood, you wait for the big movies. In college football, can we wait to see Alabama actually play somebody not named Citadel? By the time Tua played in the biggest game against Georgia, he was the third best quarterback on the field. From Jalen Hurd, then Tua. So in the NFL, everybody's given the MVP award to Patrick Mahomes. Why? These are the biggest games. The other day, I was driving home and I was thinking, why are we giving Mahomes the MVP? If they lose to Seattle in Seattle in a driving rainstorm this weekend, I don't hate Patrick Mahomes, but he'll be 0-4 in his four biggest games. Valuable, most valuable. I'm not blaming him all for the losses, but I can't give the MVP to a guy that's 0-4-4 in his biggest games. Let's stop giving out awards in football halfway through seasons, three quarters through seasons. It's a week-to-week league. I mean, every week in this league, we're like, oh, I thought they were good. They're not. Should we have given the Rams a Super Bowl in week 7? Because they look like it. The Rams were the best team in the league through 7 weeks. I sold them week 8. They were Bitcoin. Now they've crashed. Can we wait? Here's who I have for MVP right now. Most valuable player, Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck, working with far less talent than Mahomes, in the last 2 weeks, has ended a 9-game winning streak by the Texans with a better roster and thumped the Cowboys with a better roster. Phillip Rivers has a slight edge over Mahomes for second because he beat him in Kansas City. And he's won 10 of 11. And he's had two touchdowns in 14 of the 15 games. And their two biggest games of the year were at Pittsburgh, they won. And at Kansas City, and they won. And Patrick Mahomes has a lot of great stuff. But 0-4, four biggest games that they lose in Seattle. What's the hurry? What is the hurry? I don't understand this. The next 2 weeks, do you realize this week in the NFL, 14 of the 16 games have playoff implications? For the record, Kansas City won their division last year, and Patrick Mahomes didn't play in any big games. If they lose in Seattle, they'll be a wild card team. They will have stepped backwards. Come on. I can't give the MVP to that. I'm not going to give an Oscar out in June and July. I'm not going to give out the Heisman in week six because Bama beat Citadel by 90. December football games matter more. Let's let them play out. Right now, Luck, Phillip Rivers, and Patrick Mahomes. With two huge weekends left. 14 of the 16 games this weekend can decide playoff ramifications. What's the hurry? Luck is doing more with less and has won his biggest games with less talent around him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Trust is really underrated. Ask yourself. My favorite quote ever, I've said it on the show. Love many, trust few. Who do you trust with your kids? Who do you trust with your money? Who do you trust to tell a secret? Write down the names. The list. I'm 50, right? The list is small. Who do you trust? Vegas trusts what they've seen. They don't wave pom-poms in the desert. It's about lettuce. How can we make more? Want to build more big casinos. So Charles Woodson came out and said this yesterday about Tom Brady. He's absolutely right.
We talk about Tom Brady. I think over the years, we've just been spoiled. We've always seen him come back in those type of situations. I think the hits are getting to him. You see him trying to get the ball out of his hands to avoid taking those hits.
I think he's right. Let's admit two things that are facts. Tom is aging. And unless he takes cattle steroids in the offseason, when he goes to Costa Rica, he's not going to be more dynamic. He's aging. He's aging gracefully, but he's aging. Arm's not going to get stronger, not going to get more dynamic. Tom is human. The second thing is, we have to agree with, Gronk's probably retiring, Edelman's no longer elite, and Josh Gordon's not somebody you build around for 5 years. So let's agree on aging quarterback plus declining assets. What does that mean? It's the most vulnerable New England team in 15 years. But yet Vegas in the AFC has them basically right next to Kansas City in favor to win it. Why is that? Love many, trust few. Is that playoff football is about coaching, they still have the best one. Situational quarterbacking, they still have the best one. And experience, nobody's close. Let's be honest, you like Kansas City, but most of you don't trust Andy Reid. You like Houston, but they never deliver in the clutch. You like the Chargers, but they'll probably miss a key field goal. Let's be honest, Pittsburgh, do you trust Mike Tomlin's game plan against Belichick? Again, it's a trust issue. Chris Carter talked about this on First Things First. Vegas has them right up next to Kansas City because Vegas trusts New England in January. And they don't trust the rest of the AFC. Here's Chris Carter.
I would be naive to think, man, Tom Brady doesn't go out in some type of great fashion. And a lot of it's based on a couple things. Look, all these teams have warts. All of them do. It's just a matter of which one's going to come out when we get in the playoffs. The Patriot and the Patriot way, yeah, it might not have worked for November. Yeah, that might not have worked, be working for December. But who do you trust more? And I can't say right now I trust Patty Mahomes Andy Reid, Kansas City fan base, scared out their mind. One of their fans right here, pom-poms under the table, kicking and screaming. Ah! Yeah. Okay? Like, all of them have warts.
And what's funny about it is, I like Lamar Jackson. You trust him in January. I like the Steelers. But Joyce from Pittsburgh, I'm not sure she trusts them in January. I love Andy Reid. But most fans are like, can't win in January. I like Houston, but has there been a team in the NFL we've been waiting to win the big game more than Houston? So Vegas, and by the way, the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, they're like that guy that goes to the gym and just works on his arms and his pecs, but he has chicken legs. Yeah, their offense, woo-wee, it is top of the league. And their defense, yeah, it's 31st, yeah. Do you know no NFL teams won a Super Bowl with a defense in net yards lower than 25th? They're 31st. So Kansas City's got that, you know what they, that the bartender build? Where they go to the gym and they work arms and they work chest and they work shoulders. Ah, they look great. But you can't see their legs under the bar. And they got chicken legs.
Don't skip leg days.
Don't skip leg days. Kansas City looked really good above the belt. Woo! Flex, fireworks, bang. They can't tackle. They can't guard anybody. That bartender, you know, once he leaves the bar, checking out at night, you're like, oh, he skipped leg day last 12 years. Gun show, ripped, pecs, skip leg day. Every day.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Rams. I bailed on them big 2 months ago, and now I think you got a locker room full of marginally decent guys who are bailing on the team. The defense has allowed 30-plus points in four of their last six games. Goff, his arm looks shot. He misses Cooper Kupp. He's got the worst passer rating in the league over the last 3 weeks. It's at 51. And I don't love the locker room component. Going getting big-name guys like Sue Aqib Talib, who I do like as a player, and Marcus Peters. And now they're on a losing streak, and you got guys going into the stands. This team, we spotted it 2 months ago. A lot of it's a sales pitch with a new $5 billion stadium coming. I think they won October. I think they're a pretty good team now. I don't even think they're a good team now. I think they're a pretty good team. They're at 10.
Number 9.
The Patriots. Listen, I trust them late mostly because I don't trust everybody else. Here's the biggest issue. They're now not dynamic enough to win big road games. The thing I like about them, James White, Sony Michel, their running game. The thing I don't like, their front seven defensively, they have one guy who can play, Trey Flowers. That is it. It's just a bunch of dudes. Again, they're a pretty good football team. Will they be better in January? Will I trust them if they have a home game in January? Yeah, but they've never won a Super Bowl without a bye, and right now they're not getting a bye, Patriots 9.
Number 8.
The Cowboys. I've had them close to this spot. Lots of things I like about them. I mean, they're 6-0 when Zeke has more than 20 carries. And they're 2-6 when Zeke has less than 20 carries. So it's pretty obvious if you're a coaching staff what you should be doing every week. Let's get Zeke 20-plus carries. And by the way, their defense is still excellent. They've held six straight opponents under 25 points. So, and that's really an impressive thing, especially when you have a limited offense that gives the ball back to the other team's offense. So Dallas is a very good team. I think they have a low ceiling. They're at 8.
Number 7.
What do you know? Andrew Luck's good in December. He's 15-6 all time in December. He's really good in December. The story, though, of this team, yes, it's Andrew Luck number one. It's actually their defensive front seven is way ahead of schedule. Even the people in that building thought we're probably a year away defensively. They've held five straight teams under 25. Since week 7, they lead the NFL in scoring defense. Luck is the primary story. They really thought they needed another 8 players to 10 players from the draft, and they have a ton of cap space, but their defense is way ahead of schedule.
Number 6.
Crazy Pittsburgh. I mean, they are second in the NFL in sacks. In the playoffs, you play the best quarterbacks. I like teams that can pressure the opposing quarterback. And by the way, they're third in pass offense, fourth in total offense. Mike Tomlin drives me nuts. Big Ben's a drama king. But again, here's something to remember. Like Dallas, they have not lost a football game this year when they've run for 100 yards. And so against the Patriots, they had some success running the football. So this is not a complicated team. Tom Brady's better with a running game now. Colts are better with a running game now. Cowboys better with a running game. Pittsburgh's better with a running game. If they can get that consistently, I have them at six.
Number five.
Ravens, my dark horse Super Bowl team. Listen, I didn't think Joe Flacco, you'd have to have him playing well to win a Super Bowl. I don't think they're a Super Bowl winning team, but I will say this. You can't run on them, and they run on you. The NFL is not about doing a bunch of stuff. It's about having an identity and doing two or three things really well. They've held four of five teams under 260 yards. That is hard to do in 2018 in the NFL. And they faced all sorts of different kind of teams, and they're holding all of them to about 250 yards. And the other thing is, since Lamar Jackson popped in here, they lead the NFL in rushing. And it's not just lead the NFL in rushing. It's not a running back thing. Lamar Jackson is ad-libbing. People don't have a lot of tape on him. I wouldn't want to play Baltimore. I think they feel like the Chicago Bears a little bit. I got no interest playing Chicago. I got no interest playing Ravens number five.
Number four.
Number four. These are my four best teams in the NFL, and I think they're pretty close. Bears. Okay, they lead the NFL in takeaways. They're 10-0 when they can hold you under 24. It's real simple. They can't get into shootouts. They really can't. Mitch Trubisky, they have some decent backs. Allen Robinson, decent receivers. They don't, you know, Anthony Miller. This is not a star-studded offense. Pro Football Focus says their eight best players are all on defense. They cannot get in shootouts. Now, the good news is, you know, this defense, especially if they're playing at home in windy weather, probably won't have to get in a lot of shootouts. There's a certain way they have to play, but I have them at four.
Number three.
The Saints. At home, if you could guarantee home field advantage, they still have a tough schedule. They got to play Pittsburgh and Carolina again. I would put them at number one if I knew they were playing at home. I will say this. They're number one in point differential. That generally means you'll end up in the Super Bowl. But there is a real thing about the Saints that needs to be discussed. They can't throw the ball down the field. I mean, Ben Watson last night, the ageless tight end, it felt like their number one deep threat. They do not throw the ball down the field. They have big plays because Alvin Kamara is amazing, but they got a little hole in their game. I'll put them at three.
Number two.
I'll put Kansas City an inch ahead of them. Listen, Kansas City lost to the Chargers. Chargers are real good. I do think their defense will be a problem. I do think their defense is a liability. But I have these final four teams all bunched up. I had Bears 4, Saints 3, Chiefs 2, and number one.
Number one.
I think it's the best roster in the NFL and a Hall of Fame quarterback playing the best he's ever played. They've scored 20-plus points in every game this year. They've won 10 of 11. They're healthy defensively. As long as Keenan Allen can come back by the playoffs at wide receiver and Melvin Gordon is back, it's the deepest roster in the NFL. They have a hole in their game, too. They have no home field advantage, although this weekend will be crazy against Baltimore. But we have been on this joy sometimes because I live in Los Angeles. People think I'm a homer for LA teams.
Well, and you were in the Chargers draft room.
I was. But I bailed on the Rams 2 months ago.
Yes.
And I embraced the Chargers 2 months ago. And all the executives in the league that I talked to, all the scouts, when I asked them, best roster in the league, last year they told me Philadelphia, this year they all say LA Chargers. They don't have holes in this roster. Their rookies, Derwin James at safety, is first or second best safety in the league right now. So there is the Herd hierarchy.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is John Middlecoff of the 3 and Out Podcast, brought to you by the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network. If you like Colin's show, you'll like mine. We talk all football. Cam Newton's arm's falling off. Carson Wentz's back's falling off. Jared Goff's confidence is falling off. Brady's youth has fallen off. They got major issues, and we're talking about them all on the 3 and Out Podcast with me, John Middlecoff.
I have a wine store. Best cab in my wine store comes from the Doubleback Winery, Drew Bledsoe, doubleback.com. It's incredible. It's a great cab. You're having one of those smoky nights. You want to be seductive with your wife, pour a big glass of cab, big piece of beef. Drew Bledsoe started that winery years ago, and it is not some celebrity hotshot, never hangs out in the winery. You're at that damn winery all day, aren't you?
I'm up there quite a bit. You know, I mean, some guys lay asphalt, some guys have to go, do blending trials with wine. You know, everybody's got their lot in life.
That's funny. It is a great wine, by the way. You've come out with all sorts of different stuff in Walla Walla, Washington. And I go all the time. I look at your winery all the time as a picture of your beautiful family and your wife. And you're looking over the hills. It looks like it's like summer, August, and you're looking over the hills in your winery. You picked a great second career.
Yeah, you know, I tell people all the time I'm trying to go my whole life and never have a real job. You know, I got to play quarterback for a long time. You know, kind of like what you've done, Colin. I mean, you just get to sit around and talk sports all day. You never had a real job either.
No.
You know, so it's a pretty good life. And right now, just since you set me up, we've got about 4 hours left in this promotion where we get free shipping on Bledsoe Family Wine for the holidays, which you need some wine to either enjoy with your family or to tolerate your family. Right now, you go order it, and we'll ship it to you for free.
Doubleback.com. I've been a member. In fact, I've got a buddy of mine in Portland, Bill. I've got them all signed up for Doubleback. Okay, a couple questions I got to get to. First of all, people are killing me because I'm like, listen, most valuable? What Andrew Luck's doing in Indy with rookies on the offensive line, best defensive player as a rookie, is more impressive than Patrick Mahomes. Kansas City made the playoffs last year. Am I nuts?
No, you're not at all. You're not at all. You know, Andrew Luck, when he came into the league, now remember, he was the biggest can't-miss prospect, since like 1993, right?
Yeah.
he's a great player who's really been in a tough situation for a few years. And I think people have overlooked what happened because they started out kind of slow and they're kind of on the bubble. But I'll tell you what, right now, the Colts are that team that nobody wants to play. Don't let them in the tournament. I think they need some help to get in. But yeah, if they get in the tournament, they're going to make some noise.
Yeah, their defensive players are ahead of schedule on defense. And their GM, I know nobody knows who Chris Ballard is. He had a great last two drafts. A bunch of young guys they're not paying a ton to. And they're going to have a ton of cap space. So I hope they can get Andrew Luck some more weapons. By the way, it's weird. Carson Wentz is great. And Nick Foles is, to me, the best backup in the league. But something's happening. Wentz gets hurt, Foles comes in, and the offense is better. Explain it to me.
Well, there are two things that I would point to. Number one, you got to realize that Carson Wentz, you know, he's not a 10-year vet. You know, he's in his third year.
Yeah.
And so missing all of training camp, missing spring, and you know, missing preseason, those first few games, that's a lot of reps for a young quarterback to miss and still come in and be effective. So that's going on there. The other thing that happens, though, when your starter goes down and the backup comes in, there's an obligation of the rest of the team to step it up a little bit.
Yeah.
To play a little bit better and to have to play a little bit harder. When you have your franchise guy that's in there, you know, a lot of times teams will mentally dump a lot onto that franchise guy. Well, hey, Carson Wentz is going to come back and win this thing for us. But when the backup comes in, even when it's somebody as accomplished as Nick Foles, the rest of the team has to rise up a little bit. And so that happens too.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I never, listen, you guys make what you can make. Right? You take a beating, make what you can make. But Aaron Rodgers is sitting there, and Aaron's a real smart guy. And he knows if he takes $33 million, they're not signing big free agents. He knows that. And Green Bay's never been a big free agent hotbed anyway. Would there ever be a time in your career? I mean, Aaron makes a lot of money in commercials. He's got a guy that's going to make money post-football. Would there ever be a time, knowing the way the league is set up, that you would say, you know what? I'm going to take a little less money so I have a better offensive line? Or would you not trust the people upstairs to deliver those players and just take the dough?
Well, I mean, that's one thing you've seen happen in New England. You know, Tommy's playing on an undermarket contract and has for quite a few years, and it's allowed them. What it really does, if you take a little bit less, it's not necessarily the starters, like the free agent starters. It's now you can pay backups. You know, so if somebody gets hurt, and one of the stories that is sort of a footnote with Aaron Rodgers this year that is very, very real, I think they have six defensive players on IR. That matters. I mean, that really matters. Everything gets dumped on Aaron, but you lose six defensive starters, and all of a sudden you have fewer opportunities. You have to go, you know, you have to march the ball 80 yards instead of getting some short fields. That stuff really, really matters, and I think it gets overlooked a lot of the time.
By the way, I don't love Dak as a prospect. I never loved Mitch Trubisky as a prospect, but they're having success. Why are young quarterbacks, all five of the rookies this year, all have had great Sundays? Lamar Jackson's 4-1, could be 5-0. Josh Allen, got a little big band, got a little Drew Bledsoe, can move around, got a little big arm. Darnold was great Saturday. Baker's had a great month since you left, and Rosen's getting beat up but can play. Why are all these guys working now right into the league as rookies?
Well, first of all, I don't want to take anything away from these guys. They're all very good players, but you have to realize how different the game is with the rule changes that have happened, especially for young quarterbacks. It used to be when a young quarterback came in, man, they tried to rip our heads off. I mean, I remember the first sack that I took was Bruce Smith. We're up at used to be Rich Stadium, now it's Ralph Wilson Stadium. I think they've even changed it since then. But Bruce Smith came in and he put his helmet right between my shoulder blades and drove me into the ground. Man, he'd been thrown out of the game if he hit somebody like that today. And so these quarterbacks, the number one, the quarterbacks aren't getting hit as much, and that matters. It's not a toughness thing. It's just, just that matters. And then the other thing is with what's happening where they can't hit receivers in the secondary.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if people even realize that it's changed the way they coach offensive football. There has always been a hard and fast rule in football that you don't run through zones. Like if a receiver is running a crossing route and he's running through a zone defense and the quarterback throws it to him, man, they'd come get him on a stretcher. But now receivers, they just run through zones. They've changed the rules. They don't even have that rule anymore because they can't hit them. You see some of these plays, some of the catches that are made. You go back a decade, man, they'd be coming to get some of these guys on stretchers with some of the throws that are made and some of the catches they make.
I heard it was on I didn't hear the podcast. I read about it. I think the podcast was Mike Valente is a Detroit sportscaster, and he had who was that big muscly official in the NFL? Ed Hockley on. And Hockley said, listen, you guys are all complaining about too many flags. He goes, I want more flags. He goes, I'm an in-shape guy. I'm in a game. I'm seeing two or three times a game a guy get hit, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's not going to be alive. That Ed Hockley said the game is so big, so strong, so fast, he doesn't want to reduce flags. He wants kickoffs to be safer, punts to be safer. Over the last month, there have been a lot of games where there is laundry, flags on every punt. Where do you go on that? I have often said, I'll throw this at you, Drew, that if there is a play and a flag is thrown and that you deduce when the play is over, it was away from the action, then you just pick the flag up. If it's a holding by a right tackle on a left sweep, you just like, let's not slow the game down. Let's not put a quarterback in a second and 30. Do you think there are too many flags? Not enough for the game's violence? Where do you fall on that?
What they've done with the game is entirely positive. And I've heard you talk about it, and I feel the same way. It's been the most exciting NFL football season I've ever seen. The game is better than it's ever been. And so the rule changes they've made have been entirely positive. It's more fun to watch. All the quarterbacks are healthy. That's what you want. So the rule changes have been really good. I do think at times, though, some of the penalties are they're giving them too much of an advantage. For example, it's 3rd and 15, and you get a defensive holding penalty, which is a 5-yard penalty, but it's an automatic first down.
Right.
So you work so hard, you get a team. So some of the penalties, to me, like a defensive holding penalty, 5 yards and it's still 3rd down. Pass interference, if they're gonna really disadvantage the defense, it's almost like you need to take the pass interference call and make it like college, where it's,
yes,
10 or 15 yards rather than, you chuck a ball down the field on 3rd and 20 and a guy hits your guy and all of a sudden you got 1st and goal at the 1. I think that they could take a look at that if they're gonna really protect offensive players. Right now it seems like they're making things too difficult for the defense.
You know what I think you're pointing to? Too punitive. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not make the pass interference that punitive, where it's a 48-yard penalty or a defensive holding. Let's say if it's 3rd down and 10 it's not an automatic first down. It's third down and five. So I agree with you. I think holding, when you get these 10-yard penalties for holding, good God, second and 20? That quarterback.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it kills the drive, you know. There's, you know as well as I do, they could call holding on
every
single play if they chose to. And I do think they do a pretty good job of only calling, you know, holding penalties when they're really egregious. But I do think that some of the penalties are too punitive. Thanks. I was trying to come up with that word, Colin. I went to Washington State, and I just so thanks for coming up with the punitive word for me. But I do think that some of the penalties they are too punitive, and they really change games.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you shouldn't get on third and 20, a little ticky-tack holding penalty in the secondary, and all of a sudden, instead of, you know, third and 15, it's a first down. I think that's too punitive on the defense.
Doubleback.com. It is a great, great winery in Walla Walla, Washington from Drew Bledsoe. They've got a discount right now. He gives us 12, 15 minutes a couple times in the football season. We love it and appreciate it every time. It is great talking to you.
Always great. You know, Colin, one of these times you got to get back to the Northwest and actually come see us, man. I'll come pour you some wine at the winery.
Hey, by the way, I'm coming to Spokane in the next 2 months.
Okay. Yeah, let me know. I'll meet you in Walla Walla and we'll have some wine.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney joins the chorus of leaders ready to explore college football's playoff. This is from The Athletic. That's that subscription thing, right? Yeah. So the Big Ten got left out this year until the commissioner's like, yeah, we got to expand this thing, which is pretty predictable. I want to bring in Joel Klatt, lead college football dude at our network, former Colorado quarterback. So let me start with this. Do you think it's a good idea, 18 playoff?
Okay, so I don't think expansion is very good. I think that there's some pretty severe unintended consequences that would water down the regular season, and that's not what we want. You know, I don't want to move towards basketball. Everyone says basketball is this utopian society of postseason, and while March Madness is great, look what March Madness does to the regular season of college basketball.
Yeah.
Does anybody care about the regular season college basketball?
No,
of course they don't. So while it wouldn't water down completely the regular season, I'm going to give you a couple of examples of what an 18 playoff would do and would have done this season. First of all, the SEC championship game would not have mattered at all. At all. Georgia wins, Bama wins, who cares? Just why even play it? I guess for that's for them down there. Michigan, Ohio State would have not mattered at all. Now, you could say that it didn't matter because Ohio State didn't make it in, but I would argue that both teams would have been in and the result would not have mattered outside of pride. In an 18 playoff. So those are just two of many examples that I think would ultimately hurt the sport, Colin, because let's be honest, I think one of the things that college football has, I think, is that it has the best regular season, the most important regular season in all of sport, across sport, anywhere on the globe, it's the most important regular season. And I'd love to try as best as we can to retain that. And let me also preface this by saying, not even preface, let me just add on real quick. Colin, we at Fox, I've got no dog in the fight to not expand. Everything that would be good for us at Fox and me personally would be if they went to 8, because then we would have a chance to get involved. So without a dog in the fight, I still hold this opinion. There's been some conversation out there that it's just the rights holders and it's just certain networks and certain people that hold this opinion. I feel like I break that stereotype because everything that an 18 playoff would do for me personally and for our network would be beneficial, and yet I still hold this opinion that I think 8 is the wrong way to go.
But do you think it will happen?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked, because yes, I do believe that that's the direction that it's going, and I think that the tipping point is sitting in that article that you just referenced from The Athletic, from Nicole Auerbach, who wrote about Jim Delaney. Jim Delaney, I've always thought, was the tipping vote. If you take a look at, like, the Supreme Court, there's a tipping vote. In a five autonomous kind of structure in college football, the five commissioners are essentially the Supreme Court of college football, and Jim Delaney has been the one that's on the fence. You've got the Pac-12 and the Big 12 that have been always clearly in the pro playoff, pro must win your conference, pro expansion type of conversation. You've got the ACC and the SEC on the other side of that. Don't bother us. we're going to do it our way. If it's not broke, don't fix it. And Jim Delaney has been kind of the middle vote. He swung a little bit towards the ACC-SEC at the creation of the playoff. Now he's more swinging towards Bob Bowlesby of the Big 12, which is why I do believe that eventually, I think maybe in the next 2.5 years, you're going to start to see the structure outline for an 8-team college football playoff.
Devil's advocate, Alabama-Georgia last year, Alabama-Clemson, last year, year before, next year, this year, Alabama-Clemson. I love the sport. Even I'm tiring of the potential final game. It's becoming very regional. Devil's advocate, we go to 8, I'm guaranteed a Pac-12 team. I'm probably guaranteed a Big Ten and a Midwest team. Notre Dame with a better shot to get in. A fun little goofy team to get in. Maybe it could be, years ago it was Boise State. Couldn't I argue just to give, just selfishly to create more regions, less Southern, less same four teams, same two teams now, because next year, number 1 and 2, Bama and Clemson again. Can I just argue to include more? Parties are more fun when more people get invited to a party. 8 makes it a bigger party.
Okay. Yeah. And I hear that. And I think that there's a lot of sense in that. That's rational. And I certainly understand that argument. I think the, what I would say is at your 8-person party, aren't the 2 coolest people still the coolest people, regardless if there's 4 or 8 or 16 or 32?
Yeah.
I would say that there are. Now, you're saying about just interest, I think.
Yes,
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
yeah,
just from a regional interest perspective, it's getting very Southern. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not blaming anybody. They deserve it. Sure. I'm just saying, I think when sports, I don't want Duke winning every year. All dynasties are not the same. Tim Duncan's dynasty was boring. USC Pete Carroll was fun. Miami Hurricanes were fun. LeBron in Miami was fun. I think New England's getting fatiguing. Not all dynasties are the same. Bama and Clemson, it's a little stale.
Sure. I don't disagree with that. I certainly don't. I've got some fixes that I think might inject more interest into the sport.
All right, give me 2 of them.
Okay, so real quick, I would do away with divisions in every single conference, and I would pick the top 2 seeds in the conference championship game. And then, Colin, all I would say is you have to win that conference championship in order to go.
Okay.
In order to be selected.
That's
as
fair.
One of the top 4. That way, 2 years ago, think about it, the Iron Bowl would have prevented Alabama from going. See, I think that's maybe better for the sport. It increases the importance of the regular season. And in a weird way, it actually increases the access for teams that you were talking about, like the Boise States and the Utahs and the UCFs of current day, because we'd still be throwing one champ out. Now, if you say you have to win your conference in order to go, let's just say, sake of argument, Texas were to have beat Oklahoma, I think that the committee would have put UCF in over Texas. So I think you're increasing the odds that a UCF gets in, whereas right now, it doesn't matter what happens in those conference championship games. They were never going to put UCF above Georgia, let's say, after they lost. They were never going to put them above Washington, or if they were to have lost their conference championship game, or maybe they would have, I'm not sure, but you know what I'm saying there. I think you can increase access, you can increase importance, and you can also make the 5 championship games de facto quarterfinal games rather than just 4 on site. I think that you would increase the importance and value of those conference championship games as well. It's a little bit of a roundabout fix to what I think we all would desire, which is more access, more importance on more games, and more teams involved.
30 seconds left. Can Notre Dame hang with Clemson?
I think they can. Think about it from this perspective, Colin. What's the one thing Clemson is weak at? Pass defense.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Threw for 400 yards.
Yeah.
Jake Bentley threw for 500 yards. And I think Ian Book and Brian Kelly as a combination are very good. I think that Notre Dame will be able to throw the football pretty well. And I think that's the avenue if you're looking for an Irish upset.
That was good stuff from Joel Klatt. Set 12 Colorado passing records while at Colorado. I'm just reading that. Was one of them interceptions? Just kidding.
It was, and don't short me. It was 44. Boom! Baker just texted. He said, "What's up?"